Locked On NBA, the biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories in the NBA with the Locked On Podcast Network hosts. Today, we'll stop in New Orleans to speak with Jake Madison of Locked On Pelicans about the Pel's push for the playoffs and the form of Zion Williamson. We talk with Mike Richmond of Locked On Blazers about Portland. They are going in the opposite direction to New Orleans and the Damian Lillard, Zach Collins injuries and the updates on them. And lastly, we speak to Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors about Toronto, Marc Gasol's injury and their push into the playoffs. It's all coming up, the biggest stories with the local experts on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome back to another week of Locked On NBA. I am your Monday host, Josh Lloyd, and I'm also the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast and the lead analyst at basketballmonster.com and at Yahoo Sports Australia. We are into March now, so we are less than 2 months away from the NBA playoffs kicking off, so we've got lots for us to talk about here, so let's get to it. Now I've got the host of the Locked On Pelicans podcast here with me. Jake Madison is here to talk about a team that is charging towards the eighth seed in the NBA playoffs. They are currently 2.5 games back of the Memphis Grizzlies, recording this before they do take on Anthony Davis and the Lakers on Sunday. Jake, the momentum is with the Pelicans at the moment.
Yeah, certainly. They're playing their best basketball of the season. Also helps that they are a healthy team. You've got Zion Williamson back. They've got Derek Favors fully healthy. He's been very important to this team. And I think if you look at the teams that are kind of fighting for that eighth spot, this is probably the franchise that's playing the best basketball right now. And I don't even mean that in like the homerish take that it kind of probably sounds like. So I think this is a team that's kind of gone charging in the rankings here, up the standings. Their schedule is the easiest going forward, meaning they're going to have a really good chance to make up even more ground on the Grizzlies. And I think they're going to be in this potentially until the very end of the season.
So the Pelicans are 6-4 over their last 10. Memphis is 4-6, and then just behind New Orleans, you've got the Spurs at 3-7, the Blazers 3-7, and they're both half a game and a full game behind the Pelicans, respectively. The other team to watch for, I guess, is the Kings, who are 7-3 over their last 10, and they currently sit a full game behind the Pelicans there as well. So it is quite a tight race. I think that the top seven seeds, there's no one from outside of that top seven is pushing in there, given there's a seven game gap between the Mavericks and the Grizzlies. But in terms of New Orleans, do you think it's just Zion returning? But we did see some of this change of form occur before Williamson hit the court.
Yeah, they were playing better basketball before. Again, and I think it coincides with them being healthy. Lonzo Ball wasn't fully ready to start the year. Now that he's got his legs under him a little bit more, you're seeing him play some of the best basketball of his career and fits really well into kind of this fast-paced, get out in transition and run New Orleans offense, where he really excels. We've seen Brandon Ingram kind of come alive, get into the All-Star game too, and then Derek Favors being able to anchor the defense is really, really important. But, you know, Zion's kind of the guy that makes things really, really work and really, really special here, and so I think that's been a very big part of it. Since his return, they're one of the few teams that ranks in both the top 10 offensively, top 10 defensively. And when you were talking about, I want to go back to something you mentioned with those other teams in the playoff race, you know, the Pelicans have the tiebreaker over the Portland Trail Blazers. They've got two more to go against the Memphis Grizzlies. Could get that after already being 2-0 up on them on the season. They have, I think, three more against the San Antonio Spurs. So those standings are important, and those tiebreakers become really important as these teams kind of get grouped up. But yeah, New Orleans has been playing just very good basketball overall, and I think it's health that's the great equalizer. And as they've gotten Derek Favors back, Lonzo Ball playing really well, you're starting to see what this team can do and what David Griffin envisioned in making the moves he did this offseason.
I'm glad you mentioned Lonzo Ball, because I wasn't thinking about talking about him here with you, but it is important because he was benched earlier this season, and I thought that was a strange move at the time, but he was struggling. He had that weird ankle injury where he just rolled it, where he was running down the court and nothing actually happened. He missed time again, moved to the bench and was struggling. But then, since returning to that starting lineup, he has been a completely different player, and it's not just all about shooting for him. We know that there is struggles with the shooting numbers. He's still at under 40% from the field. He's at 57% from the free throw line, but he is banging in 37% of his threes. He takes quite quite a few of them, as many three-point attempts per game as Brandon Ingram, and I don't think people would realize just how many Lonzo is taking and how well he's hitting them, but he's doing so many other things. It's actually translating into, you know, fantastic basketball for this team. So do you think the benching we saw that few months ago was a trigger for Lonzo, you know, getting back to this level of form?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of it. I think it's also just being healthy. He wasn't fully healthy to start the year. And I think he kind of struggled to find where he really fit on this roster, what his role kind of is. And it's interesting because he's playing really good. He's out there starting, but you're not seeing him close halves, close games in the fourth quarter, really, because of those shooting woes, because of the struggles from the free throw line. But when he can get out in transition and run, and when the game's fast paced, I don't know if you can pick a better point guard to play with this team. So I think it's still a bit of a mixed bag with him. He's very good in transition, but when they do play a team that slows down in the half court, you kind of, he leaves you wanting a little bit more with his lack of aggression and the lack at times of shooting, though I've been pretty impressed with his three-point shot, and I trust him to take that. But he, again, struggled early in the year with the injuries, but you know, once he kind of found his role and seemed to really accept that, I think that's where his games opened up, and it's kind of a sign of maturity seeing that from him. And I know he clashed a little bit with the coaching staff at the beginning of the year, and maybe that benching kind of just made him realize, this is what my role is on the team. I need to accept that if I want to play. And you're right, it's done a very good thing for him.
Yeah, he's been a much different player. Well, not even much different, but more getting back to what he has been throughout early parts of his career with the Lakers since that benching took place. Now, let's go with the obligatory Zion Williamson section of it. Any Pelicans talk that has to be made. He is averaging 23 points so far in his 14 games in under 29 minutes a game. He's doing pretty much what he did in college, what he did in the preseason, and that's dominating down low, getting to the rim whenever he wants, you know, just overpowering guys. But I want to talk about some other parts of his game. The free throw shooting has been a problem for Zion so far in the NBA, but what about defensively? Look, where are we seeing him there? Because he has had some moments, like he had huge defensive numbers in college, and it hasn't really translated in the NBA. Does he still seem a little bit lost on that end?
Yeah, certainly. I think he's a very good one-on-one defender, and when you saw the Pelicans play the Lakers in LA last Tuesday, when he guarded Anthony Davis, Davis went 0 for 5 against him and was basically almost relegated to being a role player. And I think that's because of just the freak athlete that he is. He's one of the few people maybe in the league that can guard Anthony Davis without really leaving his feet, because his instincts on his timing and the leap of ability he has are just otherworldly at this point. But in terms of help defense and playing as part of a team defense, he certainly kind of does not have the court awareness out there for where cutters are coming from. He doesn't have the rotations and the help defense down whatsoever. I don't want to call him like a huge liability out there, but certainly that's an area he's going to need to improve upon this offseason and going into next season. But he's also played less than 20 games, and he's a rookie. You know, most guys don't get this, and most rookies in coming into the league aren't very good on the defensive side of the ball for their first 2 or 3 years. It took Anthony Davis 3 or 4 years to really become the player we thought he could be defensively coming in from Kentucky in college. So I don't know if it's a huge knock on Zion, but certainly it leaves a lot of room for improvement on that end. And right now they're also not asking him to kind of be that rim protector like he was at Duke at times. He's not necessarily hunting for blocks since teams are trying to pull him out of the paint and the spacing's a little bit different. And, you know, I think when the Pelicans envision him in the future, maybe it's at long term at the five, and we'll see it start to come in future seasons, but certainly not in that role right now. And I don't know if he has the ability to play defense at that level just yet either.
It is going to be interesting to see exactly what happens here, because it does feel like that, you know, 15 of the 16 NBA playoff spots are set. There's still plenty of jostling for position in those areas, but that 8th seed in the West is going to be a fight between, you know, 4 or 5 teams perhaps, and the Pelicans right in the thick and probably the favorite to take that spot. Jake will have it covered for us all over on Locked On Pelicans. Thanks for coming on Locked On NBA with me.
Of course, thanks for having me on, Josh.
Now it's time to talk to the host of the Locked On Blazers podcast. Mike Richmond is here with me. Portland is floundering a little bit at the moment with just one win in their last 7 games, with a couple of losses to teams that they are battling for that final playoff spot. Mike, it's not looking good at the moment for Portland to push into the playoffs, is it?
No, things are bad. I think the loss to the Atlanta Hawks on Saturday was maybe their worst loss of the season. They've got a lot that are in that category, but considering the circumstances and the beginning of the stretch they're on, where they play 7 straight games against teams under 500, starting it off by getting throttled by the Hawks in Atlanta is about as bad as it gets. Dame is not going to come back for their next game, so it's not going to get much easier. And I'm with you, man. Their playoff hopes are in trouble.
So Lillard is going to miss that game on Monday against the Magic. They play again against the Wizards on Wednesday, and then that's at home, and then back on the road for the Suns on Friday. So they do have a stretch of winnable games coming up here, and then they take on later on in March Houston, Dallas in a space of three games there, which could be some trouble. What has been this recent year? Is it just the Lillard factor that's missing that's caused this 1-6 run over the last seven games?
Yeah, I mean, they don't have very many good players. That's one of their big issues. When they kind of got on their run in the end of January, it was because Damian Lillard was playing the best basketball of maybe anyone in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Apologies to Giannis Antetokounmpo. I know he'll get mad at that. But he was fantastic, and they had kind of figured out we have six guys who can score, the regular starters, Dame, CJ, Trevor Ariza, Carmelo Anthony, Hassan Whiteside, and a little bit of Gary Trent Jr. Those six dudes were just going to carry them every single night production-wise. And without Dame on the court, now you're down to five guys, and you're asking two 35-year-olds and Gary Trent Jr. to probably step into roles that they just aren't capable of filling. So it's just a roster issue, and they lean on Dame so much that when he's not in the game and can give them 0 minutes, that they're really in trouble.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And look, CJ's been really good in this stretch, but he's playing 40 minutes a night. He's scoring 20 points, getting 10 assists a game, but it's still not enough when those other guys can't step up into that role. When we look at the standings, the way things are at the moment, they are currently in the 11th seed, but they're 3.5 games back from Memphis in the 8th seed. And we talk about the Pelicans being the favorite to perhaps get that spot. A lot of that is schedule related, and the Blazers dealing with an easier stretch here, but still got those injury concerns. Now, talking about injuries with the Blazers, what is the latest on Yusuf Nurkic and Zach Collins? Are we expecting them back at any point soon?
Zach Collins told me last week that he thinks that a middle to late March return is still very realistic. He's ramping up his on-court stuff. He's doing weight training, which he hadn't done for a long time with the shoulder. He's still eyeing that mid to late March return. I think there could be, depending on where the Blazers are in the standings, maybe some decisions made about whether they want to bring him back or not. But I think if they're in it, that Zach would likely be available for the final, three to four weeks of the season.
What about Nurkic?
Yeah, Nurkic. I mean, I kind of avoided it because we don't know. He spoke with Jason Quick of The Athletic and basically said there's still no timetable and I need to practice. Here's the thing: the Blazers already didn't practice very much, and they're certainly not going to schedule a bunch of practices when they're playing all their starters 40 minutes a night. There just isn't a good spot, a soft landing spot to get on the court and play. So he needs to ramp up some work behind the scenes, but they just don't have a space to do it. So I'd say for the first time all year, I think that Nurkic's return is in real jeopardy.
Yeah, look, they usually don't practice unless there's 2 days off in a row, and they do have that coming up on the 8th and 9th of March. There's another one on the 13th and 14th of March. I think probably if they're going to be more realistic, you're looking at that one on the 20th, 21st of March, which is 3 weeks away, and even then, what would be the point necessarily, unless he just comes back and plays a 10-minute a night role just to get his legs back under him. But I agree with you, especially considering the fact that he came back and then strained his calf almost straight away once he returned to full practice. It is hard to see Nurkic getting out there and actually being a useful or positive contributor. I think if he is going to come back, it's just going to be to get legs back under him for next season. Let's talk about Melo, who started off the season, surprising a lot of people with some big games, but to me, his play has dropped off pretty considerably since then. Where are we looking at what Melo's doing now? Do you think he can still be a positive contributor, say, for this team? Would they look to bring him back next year? Is he just starting now out of necessity? Say if Rodney Hood and Zach Collins were both healthy, where would Melo be fitting? Or is it just we need a healthy body that can help us score? What have you seen over the last couple of months from Carmelo Anthony?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think his play has fallen off a little bit. I think teams kind of have seen what he can do, and they're trying to take some of that away. Now that it's clear sort of what a 35-year-old Carmelo Anthony is going to play like. I don't think he would start if Zach Collins was healthy. The team has a lot invested in Collins and has made it clear that they want him to be the starter game one next season. And that, to me, puts Melo's position in jeopardy. If he doesn't want to come off the bench, I think this is not the spot for him. Or if he says, okay, I'll come off the bench, but his choices are between a Portland team that wasn't very good or, say, the team that LeBron James plays for down in Los Angeles, maybe he chooses the latter of those two options. You know, he's a 35-year-old scorer whose scoring has like really dropped off efficiency-wise. He helps a little bit because the Blazers just need anyone who can kind of get buckets in isolation, but he just hasn't been able to do it with enough real consistency. His last really good game came against the Pistons when he was guarded by Sekou Doumbouya, so maybe he needs more teenagers who aren't really NBA-ready to guard him.
It's just like beating up on your own son, I guess, being out there against an 18-year-old. Last question for you, Mike. How surprised have you been, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but how surprised have you been that Gary Trent seems to have jumped ahead of Anthony Simons in the Blazers prospect rankings, and at least in Terry Stotts' rotation?
Yeah, I'm pretty surprised. I'd say the Blazers are pretty surprised too. They were touting Anthony Simons as a six-man candidate on a championship-level team in August, and it turns out he is the second-best player in his draft class on the roster who can play shooting guard. It's really changed. So it's a big surprise. Gary Trent, I don't think he has real star potential, but I think he's really showed some very solid role player-y stuff. He plays hard on defense. He's not an elite defender, but he really competes on defense and he can shoot it. I mean, that's a good enough skill set to be in the league a while. And he looks like someone who could contribute on a team that isn't going to win 34 games.
How long do you think it is until Gary Trent becomes the best Gary in the league behind Gary Harrison and Gary Payton? There is two competitors at the moment.
Ooh, I'd say, well, Gary Harris' graph is really going the wrong direction. So right now, I'd probably buy low on Gary Harris staying better than Gary Trent Jr., but just for the sake of fun podcast fodder, I'll say 20 months.
All right.
20 months, and then that's the best Gary in the league.
Okay, let's check back in on that for the Gary Championship belt. Mike, thank you for jumping on Locked On NBA with me, and you can check out all of his Blazers coverage over on Locked On Blazers. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
Let's now bring in the host of the Locked On Raptors podcast. Sean Woodley is here with me to talk about a Toronto team who's just coming off a loss against the Denver Nuggets on the road in Denver. But otherwise, things are looking okay for Toronto as they sit at the top of the, or close to the top of the Eastern Conference standings. Sean, did this loss to the Nuggets on Sunday, did it expose anything that Toronto is lacking? Or is it, you know, large part of it because their two top line centers were out and Nikola Jokic just had his way with them?
Yeah, I think the only thing it exposed is that the Raptors are very injured, and it's been the case all season long. And I mean, it's been a fun story in the way the Raptors have like persevered through injuries and guys being out at various times throughout the entire season. And I think a lot of the joy that this season has spawned for Raptors fans has come from those injuries and the performances of guys in the, you know, who were filling in, right? You've seen Terrence Davis take off as an undrafted rookie. You've seen, really nice performances from the likes of Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Chris Boucher, and some fun, you know, really impressive victories over really good teams with, you know, kind of ragtag crews out there. And so that's been fun. But I think between this loss to Denver and the loss to the Hornets on Friday night, and going back even to the Bucks loss on Tuesday, although I don't think anyone can be blamed for losing to the Bucks at this point, you know, I think it's gotten to the point where the injury thing is no longer cute and fun. It's kind of just like exhausting and tiresome, and every time some new injury report comes out, it feels like you're getting punched in the gut all over again. And so that's kind of the only thing that this team really needs right now is to get healthy, because they've been going all season long on fumes trying to survive with, you know, two, three different guys out of the lineup, and I think they're finally reaching their breaking point a little bit, and it's kind of permeating the team a tad.
When can we expect Marc Gasol back? Because it's been a long time with his second hamstring injury of the season. Still no real clear update. It seems like this is a long time coming, this injury situation for Gasol, who, as an old man with multiple hamstring injuries, you've got to be concerned. What are we expecting here?
So Nick Nurse, I think when he was asked about it out of the All-Star break, because it seemed like he was kind of on track to return for the first game out of the break against the Suns over a week ago now, and that never transpired. And Nurse sort of said, yeah, he probably gets into like 10 to 12 games to close the season. And I think that kind of makes sense. I'm not sure exactly what the status of Mark's hamstring is right now and how far along he's in the recovery. You know, you'll see him out there in warmups and stuff like that sometimes. He's not like sprinting or anything like that, but he does seem to be doing some work. But I just think with how important he is to what the Raptors do and how important he was last season and proves and figures to be this season to what the Raptors want to do in the playoffs and their playoff ceiling, I think they're just being super, super cautious. As you mentioned, he's an old man with banged up hamstrings. He's 35 years old. I don't think they're taking any risks here. And I think that's the right thing to do. It just gets tough, right, when Serge Ibaka is also out. And Ibaka, for the most part, has been fantastic for the Raptors in the time that he's been filling in as a starting center behind Gasol. And so they haven't really missed him or I don't want to say they haven't missed him, but they haven't really skipped a beat when it comes to picking up wins. It's just when both of them are out and you're rolling out Rondae Hollis-Jefferson as your starting center against Nikola Jokic that things get really, really difficult. And I'm not surprised that we've sort of seen a bit of a downturn in the play lately. And I think you're just kind of seeing it too. I mean, Kyle Lowry seems, you know, he's always ornery and always barking at referees, but he seems even more sort of pointed and angry lately. Yeah, I think Nick Nurse is getting really just sort of frustrated and flummoxed by the whole thing as well. And so Gasol can't return soon enough, I'll tell you that. I look forward to seeing him play. I miss watching him throw cool passes and, you know, playing, you know, near all defense level, you know, rim protection and all that stuff. But I think the caution is warranted here, and I don't think we'll see him back probably at least until the middle of the month. But the Raptors had this, they're on a road trip right now for a couple weeks, and they have like 4 days off once the road trip is over on March 9th. And then I think we might see him maybe for that middle part of the month because they have some pretty big matchups. They have the Celtics coming up in a big tiebreaker implications game. They've got the 76ers coming up, and I'm sure Joel Embiid is hoping that Marc Gasol won't play that one, but I'm sure Raptors fans are hoping the opposite.
Last thing, Sean, OG Anunoby the last couple of games has really stepped it up against Denver. He had a career high 30 plus points, 7 steals. He's getting steals. He's way more aggressive offensively. Is this just a little bit of a flash in the pan, or have we seen OG turn that corner that we've been hoping for, but maybe weren't all that confident he'd be able to do it offensively, but he's sort of putting it together on both ends of the court at the moment?
Yeah, he seemed to kind of turn a corner early on this season. He was really, really good for the first month or two, and then he kind of slowed down a little bit. And I think a lot of that was, I think Pascal Siakam, when he went down in the middle of December with his belt on the injury list, which everyone on the Raptors has had so far, barring OG, you know, OG was forced to slide down to play the four a little bit. And I don't think he's super comfortable playing the four. I think he's just kind of happy on the wing playing the three, and, you know, going up a size doesn't really seem to work all that well for him. So he was kind of out of sorts there, and he was kind of out of sorts for a little while offensively, you know, as a result. And it's been a couple months that he's been sort of up and down. His defense has always been there, and it's absurd. Like, he was doing a better job than anyone else on the Raptors against Nikola Jokic on Sunday. He will guard pretty much any position, and he does it really, really well. And it's gotten to the point now where teams are like kind of ignorant and stupid to be running pick and rolls in his vicinity. I think of the 7 steals he had against the Nuggets on Sunday, I think 5 of them were just blowing up a pick and roll and taking the ball for himself. And that's just, he's very long. He's very smart. He's got great hands, and he's become just like an all world wing defender. And I think that's real. Whether the offense sticks, whether the 3-point shot or the ball handling and things like that are to stay, I'm not sure. I think there are a few things that will always kind of be there for him. He's so strong. He's really good around the rim and finishing around the rim, whether he's in the dunker spot or he's cutting baseline. And his 3-point shot has always been pretty average, at least. So I think OG, maybe he's not on some sort of like Pascal Siakam-like development curve, but he's pretty damn good. And he's a lot of fun to watch when he's on like he was on Sunday.
Well, to hear more about OG and the eventual return of Marc Gasol, you can catch Sean over on Locked On Raptors. Sean, thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
No problem, man.
And that'll do it for another episode of Locked On NBA. Make sure you are subscribing so you never miss an episode. We come at you 5 days a week. Give us a 5-star rating or review on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Spotify. And follow the network on Twitter and on Instagram at Locked On NBA Net and myself at RedRock_Beeble. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.